Tights and Mights podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy, Mike Eagle, is there as well. Tights and Mights podcast. Tights and
It's time for Tights and Farts.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Tights and Farts. Did I go too deep for that one? Did I go too deep?
You know, I didn't recognize it. I was going to ask you what that was.
I'm going to tell you. Well, I'll do this part first.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I interrupted myself. The show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm the Philadelphian podcasting machine, Hal Lublin, and I'm joined by my fellow members of the Nation of Conversation, Sister Biro, Danielle Radford.
Hello.
And the Second City Sultan of Song, Mike Eagle.
All right. That's a lot of S's.
That's so many S's.
Yeah. One C pretending to be an S.
I know.
That was good.
Yeah. Traitor ass C.
It's too much alliteration. And just, all right, I'm going to tell you guys what song I was doing. I'll do it now. It's Christian's first theme song when he's
on Christian! Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, that was
Christian. You are on your own.
Oh, I used to love that. And like Falling Sparks and stuff.
Yeah.
And he had the hoodie with no sleeves. He was the first person to rock that.
He was. And now they're like, they're the plague.
That's the thing.
They're everywhere. Yeah. I don't like it.
That's pretty horrible.
Buy some sleeves.
You know?
Well, that was, Edge got the sleeves in the divorce. And the duster. All right.
And the Hall of Fame induction.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Maybe this is Christian's year. Probably not. Coming up on this week's slightly truncated show, Peak Deletion. The sun sets on a new day, beyond the end of the line, and a lot more. But let's get started with some news that broke just after we recorded last week. The WWE is instituting a new title to their mix. The company held a press conference in London where Triple H announced a new localized champion will be crowned in the UK. Here's a clip.
One of the great things about the WWE Network is our ability to further engage our fans around the world with localized content. We spend the better part of a year working right here with brands such as Progress, RevPro, ICW, and OTT in Ireland. We spent that time to identify and cultivate the best talent in both the UK and Ireland. And today, we're excited to announce that we will crown, for the first time ever, a WWE United Kingdom champion.
I hope you enjoy being in business for a little while longer, all you UK promotions, because we're coming to close you down.
I don't get it.
Where is it going to... Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you. The 16-man tournament to crown the first ever United Kingdom champion will happen January 15th and 16th in London and will air live on the WWE Network. Triple H also says that the goal is to parlay this tournament into a weekly show on the network in the same vein as 205 Live with the Cruiserweights. Danielle, if the goal is for these guys overseas to have their own program, can only hope that it's rolled out a bit less like 205 Live and a bit more like NXT. What do you think they need to do to make the show work?
I think that the trick is, and it's something that and we'll talk about it later, they're finally starting to do with 205 Live, you got to get in the dudes that you already have that people know. Like, even the indiest, markety, marky, smark, smartsies don't necessarily know who all these UK dudes are, you know? Right. Like, I feel like we talk about, you know, Japan and Mexico more than we talk about UK, unless they're, like, over here doing stuff. So I think it can't be that I'm sure those guys are talented and wonderful and great, but if you want to get everybody on the same train, you've got to start bringing in some of these dudes who you've already signed, talent you already have, and folding them in with the UK folks so that people have someone there that they know and they're familiar with.
Okay. Now, Mike, at that same press conference, Finn Balor showed up and shared an interesting thought. Let's hear that.
I believe this is going to supercharge the United Kingdom and Irish wrestling scene. But more importantly, this is going to bridge the gap between independent wrestling and the WWE, something that has never been done before.
Who wrote, who wrote this shit? Neither him nor Triple H believe a single word they're saying.
No.
Oh, gosh.
Well, now, we've all said that WWE being the name in pro wrestling hasn't been the best thing for wrestling as a business. So, Mike, do you think them further blurring the lines between WWE and the indies is actually a good thing?
Well, I can say that it's introduced me to a lot of names on the indies that I wasn't familiar with before the Cruiserweight Classic, and I'm happy for that. I'm happy to have been exposed to some people. And I think it works really great in that sense, in terms of them shining a light on people who exist doing great things outside of their system. The problem happens when they try to bring people in and throw them into a mix that's very much homogenized and very much based on people who look and talk a certain way. So, I'm interested, I guess, in the boundaries or rules of how this championship is defended, because if that's something that's strictly over there and there's like natural boundaries to it being on Raw or SmackDown or something like that, then I think it makes a lot of sense. Aside from that, if they start blurring the lines in terms of where and how that thing can be defended or who can hold it or any other weirdness like that, then I think it'll fall apart pretty quick.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. I want to follow up on that. You talked about those indie guys that you got to know through WWE. Have you been motivated to go find their other work elsewhere, or is it just I was exposed to them and now I know that this, you know, whatever promotion they came from is a good, legit promotion?
Well, what it does is now that if somebody offers to show me an Evolve show, for instance, now I can look at that card and see that I recognize half of those names, and it actually makes me want to watch the show. Where before the Cruiserweight Classic, I would have been interested in Evolve Wrestling in theory, but probably never watched it.
Would you say your opinion on watching Evolve Wrestling evolved?
I would definitely say that that there was evolution in my interest of Evolve. It evolved.
I had to wait until Hal wasn't actually in the studio to make that one.
That was so great.
I know. I'm actually destroying furniture in my apartment right now.
You're so calm.
There's nothing left. You know what? I've moved into like a fugue state. That's just nothing.
Beautiful.
I've been over the edge now. That's it.
You ought to help people move.
Yeah. Well, honey, all we need to do is get this forked from one place to the other place. We're all good. we'll keep an eye on the UK championship. That really took it out of me, Danielle.
Really did. I'm so sorry.
I was almost out of 2016. We're almost there. And now look what's happened. But we're going to keep an eye on the UK Championship Tournament in January. But one place where the lines of indie wrestling and WWE started to be blurred was in NXT. So let's turn our attention there. Last week, Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Samoa Joe in a steel cage match to retain the NXT championship. And if you haven't kept up with NXT lately, you're like me. You might have missed that the championship has changed hands twice in the last month. I did know that one. Joe wanted to take over Toronto. Then Nakamura won it back in an Osaka, Japan live event, which was later broadcast on NXT. Mike, Samoa Joe has won the title two times. The first time was at an untelevised NXT event. The second time, he lost it 2 days after winning it. Do you think that's the best way to showcase him as a star?
I feel like the best way to showcase him as a star is to have him competing for your heavyweight championship on one of the 5,000 hours of live television that you produce a week. That's probably the best way to showcase him. Now, if you're not going to do that, if you're going to have him in NXT, I think as long as he's competing for and or holding that belt, then that's fine. How he wins or loses it, I don't think is going to make that big of a difference in how he's perceived. As long as he's the top guy in that small pond, then I think they're doing right by him. But of course, I believe that the best thing to do with him is to put him in front of everyone.
Well, yeah. I liked him chasing down a title opportunity when he didn't have the belt. In the lead up to NXT TakeOver Toronto, where he was running through the roster and threatening to hospitalize people, that sort of added dimension to his character. But it felt like that title switch at Toronto was really just so they could switch it back to Nakamura in front of his fellow country people. Danielle, do you think that was the right move?
I think it's the right move if we start thinking about Joe moving. I think the problem with NXT is that, like, when obviously, when they did the brand split and brought a bunch of guys up, now there's kind of, it's a rebuilding year, and it's still good. It's still great wrestling and they're constantly getting in new talent. It's still really, really good. But the bigger names are gone. I would be more than happy to watch Joe go ahead and come on up and get ready to come up for the Rumble. So I like to believe that that's what's happening, is he's going to chase the title again and then, like, not get it again, and then he's going to show up at the Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, too. I think so let's take stock for a second. That feud is over. Nakamura's now beaten him twice in a row, so that we can consider that feud blown off.
I never believe that.
But let's assume for a second it is. Let's assume Nakamura is going up to the or rather Samoa Joe is going up to the main roster. Seems like Ty Dillinger might be headed up to the main roster as well. Let's go around real quick. Quick prediction: who's the next challenger to Nakamura's title?
It's got to be Rude, right?
It's got to be Rude.
It's got to be Rude.
It has to be Rude.
Who else is there?
Yeah, for sure it's Rude. Come on. We fooled all of you listening. You thought we were going to say different people? Suckers. All right.
I was going to say No Way Jose, but then I got peer pressured into saying Bobby Roode.
I think that No Way Jose has some more time to cook in NXT, but it would be fun. It would be really fun to watch him chase the title.
I'd like to watch him get kicked a few times.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I'd be into that.
His hair's so fun when he gets kicked in the face. Pew, 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 pew.
Well, if you want to talk about fun hair, we do have one final piece of news.
Carlito?
These days.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
He's back.
My bad. I got excited. I'm sorry.
You were about to take an apple to the face, America.
I would be so happy to.
Let's talk about Matt Hardy, okay?
Woo.
Last week, they had an entire hour of TNA that featured the brand's biggest character, and they called it Total Nonstop Deletion.
Abyss. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You said the biggest one. I got confused again.
You are looking at the site of tonight's broadcast, the Dome of Deletion in Cameron, North Carolina. And tonight, history will be made from the broken brilliance of Matt Hardy, as the entire broadcast will be presented from House Hardy. This is Total Nonstop Deletion.
A fun fact, actually, this is also a suicide note.
Yeah, really. Yikes. I mean, come on, fuck this. All right, Danielle. Central match of all this is something called Tag Team Apocalypto. I think it's time for another installment of Danielle Explains while Hal shakes his head in silence. All I saw, and I know we'll talk about it in a second, is his son winning a match against a grown man because that old guy came in, the gardener or whatever, and used a taser on him.
Yeah, you guys can't see me, but I knew this was coming. I've been like in the back while that clip played, I was cracking my knuckles and my neck. I was stretching. Yeah. I was doing some vocal, like some warm up mouth exercises.
It was going down.
All right.
This is going to be a lot.
It's very hot in here.
This is the TNA-est TNA shit I've ever heard of.
Let the record show, Maxell Hardy also holds a victory over Disco Inferno. We should all never forget this.
Never forget
it's
it.
Not the first grown man that Maxell Hardy has defeated.
Well, we know Cyrus won't forget.
Of course.
No matter what. All right, Danielle, break it down. What is Tag Team Apocalypto and why should I care?
Okay, so I kind of, unfortunately, because the Maxwell thing started before, so I'm going to... This whole Apocalypto thing was the entire show. The whole show took place at the Hardy compound. And throughout the show, they were breaking in with news coverage that was like, and all of Camden, North Carolina has been evacuated because of Apocalypto, and the seismic meters are going crazy, and there's a volcano, and like there's all this stuff. So they're covering it. They're doing live news coverage about how like everything's been evacuated and the town might end. Because if the Hardys didn't win, they were like, we're going to destroy Camden, like the entire town.
Cameron, please. Is that it, part I know.
Is it Cameron or Camden?
Who cares? It's fine.
It's Cameron.
Cameron. And the whole town's covered in pink. It just talks about how mad you are. So so the first match was Maxwell coming out in like a baby Hummer and Rockstar Spud. And yes, Senior Benjamin tased Rockstar Spud and Maxwell got the cover.
I'm sorry, Danielle. I'm sorry. Are you hearing yourself?
Yes. Oh, we have just started.
Oh, God.
We just started.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
So I haven't seen this.
No.
And it doesn't sound like I'm going to now. But Are all of these matches like pre-taped and edited like all of the other stuff that's been from the compound?
No. Oh. Most of it's not. Most of it's not. Like in okay. the ring. But it's that, you know, it's in that beautiful low def we've come to appreciate from Total yeah. Nonstop Action.
Interesting.
Excuse me. So then some woman comes in named ODB.
I love ODB. ODB came back?
ODB came back.
ODB's the best.
I miss the ODB era.
ODB was a crown jewel of old TNA. Okay, she was amazing.
So ODB came back.
Okay.
And she fought this chick, but she didn't win. But at the end, Vanguard 1 came out to the ring to salute ODB. And ODB took Vanguard 1 and, like, put him right in the cleavage and did, what's that move called where you put someone's head in the cleavage and then you shake your boobs?
The motorboating?
Yeah, so yeah, she motorboated Vanguard 1 when Vanguard 1 came out to appreciate her. So maybe she'll be back and she'll be doing more stuff.
Okay.
All right, Danielle.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to stop you.
You can't. There's so much more.
Do you think this is too much? Have they jumped the shark with this?
Oh, yeah. This is definitely, they can't do this anymore. This has to be it. So Tag Team Apocalypto. So the rules for that are all tag teams through time and space can enter. And so you've got the Helms Dynasty, the Rock and Roll Express.
Were they actually there?
Yes.
Okay, now I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, it's the Rock and Roll Express. And they're very charming. And the whole time they're like, you crazy bastards.
Oh, I love it.
Like, they're very cute. And they get put over heavy. Like, the Hardys make them look good for sure. Okay, so here's, so the Helms are there with Shane Helms. Some other teams enter. There's a team called Showtime. Of course, they're black. Because that's, you put your name, you put Show and Time, it's going to be a black tag mm-hmm. team.
Yep, that's true.
Rockstar Spud keeps being like, my partner's coming and he's bigger than all of you. And then guess what? It's Hornswoggle. Except he just goes by Swoggle now.
He does. Because he doesn't own anything.
He doesn't own anything, but he had on a pretty great King of Small Style shirt.
Oh.
I will say that was pretty
King
dope.
King of Small Style.
Yeah. Shane and the Helms, they start kicking the dilapidated boat. And Matt got real mad because no one fights Sarsgaard. They dump Shane in the Lake of Reincarnation because they have a lake, and it's the Lake of Reincarnation.
Does he come out as the Hurricane?
First he comes out as 3 Count.
Oh, shit! Okay, look.
Yeah.
Now, I might have to stop you because I actually want to be surprised now. I don't want you.
Oh, no.
I don't want you to kill all the spoil surprises.
Okay, because there's a lot of, it is fun.
The Lake of Reincarnation is actually the best thing on the Hardy compound.
It is the best thing on the Hardy compound. Ugh.
Well, I have other questions here, but fuck that shit. If you'd like to share your opinion about the stories we just talked about, or you have any idea of what Danielle was just saying.
And you probably, it's okay if you don't.
Yeah, make a post at facebook.com/group/tightsfights. I have to say, I do like Matt Hardy. I think he's a legitimate genius. He has a great mind for the business, but... somebody's got to say no. After a break, we're going to talk about Raw's pay-per-view that had a ton of developments for the participating wrestlers. You're listening to Tights and Fights.
What do Maria Bamford, Jad Abumrad, Dick Cavett, Phoebe Robinson, Dan Deacon, W. Kamau Bell, Brooke Gladstone, and Andrew W.K. have in common? They've all been speakers and performers at past Max Fun Cons. Every Max FunCon is a murderer's row of amazing stand-up comedians, thoughtful cultural leaders, and skilled artists. And Max FunCon and Max FunCon East 2017 will be no different. Visit maxfuncon.com for dates and more information and to grab your ticket before they're gone.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin, and with me as usual to talk about all things wrestling are...
Danielle Radford.
And...
Mike Eagle. I'm awake, I promise.
You weren't lulled to sleep by broken Matt Hardy. Every week, we like to pick a topic that warrants extra attention and discuss it at length. This is our main event. All right, WWE Roadblock End of the Line may have had a dumb name, but there were plenty of developments throughout worth talking about. Before we get into specifics, I'll say I thought it was a pretty decent show, but it's the little things that WWE seems to drop the ball with all the time that take what is a good show and just make me think about all the things I wish had been done differently. And it's everything from some of the production choices to some of the booking choices, to even the commentary choices. We'll get into that a little bit more, but I thought it was a solid show. Mike, what did you think?
You know, I'm not done watching it yet. I think the only thing I haven't seen is Rusev and Kaz.
That's fine.
Yeah, and I think I might just skip it. Yeah. I thought it was enjoyable. I enjoyed the main event and what happened after. I enjoyed Jericho and Rollins. I enjoyed Sasha and Charlotte, but I was a little weirded out by a couple things that happened in it. I mean, and I think maybe that's, you know, and I think maybe that's what you're speaking to as well. Like, I thought it was an enjoyable show with some good matches and showed the hints of like some long-term progression in booking and stuff. There's just, you know, there's just little stuff that I get caught up on now because I watch the product entirely too closely, and I expect there to be some sort of consistency with things, and stuff just weirds me out.
Danielle, overall impressions of the show?
You know, it was fine. It was enjoyable. I had fun. There were definitely like there were some lulls and there were some things that I really like enjoyed, and there were like a bunch of misses. You know, I didn't mind the best friendship as much as I know that everyone hates it and I know it takes away from the title. You're never watching Kevin Owens try so hard to be loved. Just like it's never gonna not. Do something for me.
I love it too, but gosh, what, you know, how great would it be if he was somebody we were expected to cheer for and we could actually do that, you know? Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
That too. You know? It would be nice if there were more faces that were friends.
How about it?
I want some faces that are best friends.
Well, let's start with three faces that are best friends. And we'll start off with the first match of the official pay-per-view where the New Day's record-breaking run as tag team championships came to an end. But before that, they cut one last championship promo trying to decide on a name for their opponents, Cesaro and Sheamus. Let's listen.
AKA the Shameful Swingers. AKA the Fellowship of the Swing. You see what I did there? AKA Swing Low Swiss Chariot. You see what I did there? Swing low, Swiss chariot, never taking our titles home.
Well, whatever you want to call them, you're going to have to call them champs now because they have won the titles. I like the match a lot. I like the story of the match. I even love the finish of the match. I really like the finish of the match.
I dug the finish too.
Mm-hmm.
But it suffered, I think, Mike, from something you talk about over and over again, which is heel face dynamics. Both teams are supposed to be face teams now, but they're both heels. I thought that Sheamus was turning face with Cesaro, but now they're back to one's heel, one's face. Did it work for you, Mike?
Yeah, for the most part, it did. I liked the gravity of the title change and how like the New Day were visibly sad and shaken. And that making the title change feel meaningful. I like that there was a little hint that maybe they might turn heel at the end, but they didn't because because again, that keeps the heat on the title. It doesn't change the narrative of the story instantly. And they can turn heel anytime. I don't necessarily have a problem with Sheamus and Cesaro being a face heel team. What I want them to do though is find another way to show that. Other than yay, boo, yay, boo, yay, boo, because I'm tired of that shit already. And I love Cesaro jumping into the crowd, but I'm telling you, he's going to do that one day soon, expecting those people to be with him, and he's going to be surrounded by apathy, and it's going to be a horrible night for all of us. So the dynamic is fine, but they need to find another way to kind of show that, not lean on the same trick over and over again.
Okay. Danielle, what did you think?
I really, really, really liked that match. I liked the little heel moments that New Day was peppering in. I wanted them to turn heel at the end, but as always with Danielle Radford, friendship wins at the end. And so Cesaro giving that huge hug, I'm like, okay. I'm good with it.
Well, the tag team titles weren't the only title reign to come to an end. Charlotte Flair and Sasha Banks had what's supposed to be the final installment of their rivalry that should have ended 2 months ago. I added that myself. Danielle, Charlotte's now a four-time champion. If this is the end, at least for now, do you think it ended on a strong note?
No.
Sorry, what did you think of that? I wasn't clear.
No.
Sure. What are you, Jerry Lewis, doing an interview with the Hollywood Reporter? Did
no.
you guys see that? Yeah. Too soon. Okay.
No. Like, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's hard when you've already had Sasha do an Iron Woman match like so soon ago. That was the big deal. And now this is supposed to be the big deal because it's on a pay-per-view and it's on the main roster. And I thought it was good. And I did think it should have been the last match. Like, sorry, Roman. Sorry, Woman Wayans. But it should have been the last match. Yeah. I know a lot of people were really like, well, now Sasha doesn't look like a fighting champ because she tapped out right before the thing. But it's like, you know, the idea is supposed to be if a submission is so good, maybe you're not paying attention to the time. And then she got all bloody, which was dope. Because I'm trying to think of times I've seen a woman with just fucking that much fucking color on her face.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was great. You know she took pictures afterwards and was so proud. Yeah.
You and I were texting during that match, and neither of us could figure out the point at which she was busted open. Obviously not a blade job. She obviously, nobody was planning for blood to fly out of her mouth and nose. But you brought up a good point, Danielle, that I want to dig into a little bit more.
I think Charlotte slapped her and busted her lip, though. That's what I think happened.
It could be. It's hard because when Sasha sells, she touches, every time she sells, the first thing she does, she touches her lip, she looks at her hand, she touches her lip, and then she looks up all mad. Now y'all are going to go back and look at old matches, but that is how Sasha sells.
Wow. Right. But you bring up a good point, which is Sasha tapping out as time expired in the initial 30 minutes of the match. So some people say that made her look weak, as you pointed out. Lance Storm was one of the guys on Twitter who came to defense of that booking choice by saying, if you're in a really painful hold, you're not going to be looking at the clock. So next time somebody hooks you and stretches you out, see how mindful you are of time and are just sort of tapping out to the pain. Mike, where do you sit in that argument?
Yeah, I just think that in service of both of these characters following this feud looking strong, I think you find a better way to make her lose. And I know, and that's the thing. This is in service of, basically, this is in service of Charlotte's finishing move.
Yep.
Which is great. Like, get her move over, fine. But I don't know if you sacrifice the top babyface of your division. Like, I think there's other ways you can make her lose. I think her taking a pin is more effective in this sense. I think selling her as having been devastated by a move and knocked out for 3 seconds is a stronger way to have her come out of it than like fighting for a life and tapping out twice in the same match. I don't know. I can't say that I thought that was the way to go, and I feel like I would have been more pleased, or I wouldn't have been distracted by it so much if it had been pinfall losses rather than tap out losses.
Yeah, I think we're so used to that thing of like the baby face is going to fight, they're going to fight, they're going to fight,
right.
They're going to fight, that if she would have just gotten flat out knocked out and then woke up and was like, oh, fuck, I lost the match, or oh, fuck, we're tied or whatever, I do think having her tap out twice is maybe not the best.
Yeah, I think twice was a lot. I think, yeah, if you do that in the first fall and then, you know, and then something happens in the end where it's something more devastating, or then you can work in where Charlotte cheats or something, but she won straight up. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, that's the issue. Like, there's such a great cheating spot to be had there that they did in May of 2000 when Triple H and The Rock were wrestling in an Iron Man. I think it was this match where Triple H clocked The Rock with a chair, took the disqualification, then got a pinfall with the idea he was going to get another one right away. So you can get two falls. You lose one fall in the disqualification, you get an immediate pinfall for one fall in your favor, and then you roll them out of the ring and get a count out for a second one.
That's
like give me some heel stuff.
Yeah, give us some sort of cleverness that, like, excuses the babyface failing,
like,
so that we can still believe in her.
The way that Sasha did on Bayley when they did the Iron Man. That's what I'm talking about the storytelling of the match. Like those moments, those like smart, calculated, like, I have a half an hour, how do I do this in a way that's clever and whatever. Right. That's what Sasha gave us when she was heel. And I mean, I love Sasha, but Sasha is a better heel than she is a face. That's just not even, she's a face because we love her as a heel. And it, like, there was no point where she just turned other than, like, her crying, I guess, was her when she turns. But, like, Sasha, and so my one big hope is, like, maybe Sasha will go back to being a heel now.
Yes.
But well, probably not.
Let's take a look now and take a shift to look at what was probably the most interesting thing to happen to the Cruiserweight division since 205 Live premiered. Former NXT champion Neville made his dramatic return from injury and became the most dominant heel in the division right away. Let's hear a clip.
Rich Swan.
Yeah, going back to Japan. They're great friends.
Oh, Neville blasting Swan! I was just going to say he was great friends with Swan. He coached and he trained him. And now Neville beat the hell out of him. And now TJ Perkins. And Neville gets a kick to the midsection. And Neville again dropping Perkins.
I love this side of Neville.
Where did this come from?
It's so good.
All right. I think we all think this is the right move for Neville right now. I know he goes to a slightly smaller brand. Not slightly smaller. I know he goes to a much smaller brand that fewer people care about or know about. But do you think his skills are better used here? Is he the thing that the Cruiserweights need to help build them up and build interest?
No, this is perfect. This was exactly, this is like better than what I wanted because I never assumed they were going to turn Neville. And like I wanted him to come back and be part of that division. I never assumed that it was going to be him coming in and just laying everyone to waste and being like, oh, hi, remember me? I'm back. I'm dominant and I'm dope. It's perfect.
What is he? He did some heel work in NXT. Is that correct?
Yeah, he almost turned heel on Sammy towards the end of their rivalry, although he didn't turn full heel on him. He had some sort of heelish tactic.
My wonder is, and I enjoyed that segment a lot, the surprise of it and what it would mean for somebody of his stature, not only visibility, but actual physical stature to be involved in that division too, because he's a thicker guy and he can, I think he in that division is going to look physically dominant in a way that's needed. But I'm wondering what his heel moveset is. Like, what is, like, I know he's going to be able to kick the shit out of people, but, like, is he still going to do the red arrow as a finisher, as a heel? Is that still going to be the thing? Because I don't know if that's still going to work as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think they're going to put him off. He sort of comes off as a monster heel in that division, even though he weighs, like, 195? Something.
Does he weigh 195?
Yeah, his power, for a guy who's 195, I think he's sub 200. For a guy who weighs that much, I know he was able to, like, deadlift guys that were way bigger than him into a German, you know, he picks him up off the ground and then hits him with, a German suplex. Yeah, he's got an incredible power. So maybe he moves to more of a power moveset with a group of guys where it makes sense for him to do that. You know, they had to sort of cut off part of his moveset.
I really would like that, and I would like if they changed his look a little bit too. You know, so he looked less like a superhero and more just like a bruiser kind of character. I think that would service that turn really well too.
Yeah, that superhero thing never connected with me.
Yeah,
like I get it, but like never the cape. Like you don't have to.
Apparently, Vince has wanted to do a superhero for a long time, and I guess the Hurricane wasn't big enough for him. So
I guess, and I know that there was originally a thought that he might do a Mighty Mouse thing, and it's like you don't have to though.
That's
like
Vince.
Vince
wants to do things from the 1940s.
You're allowed to do whatever you want on your multi-million-dollar television show, but you could also
have good ideas.
Yeah,
you know?
you can just try it. Right. Yeah. See how it feels.
Moving on to a non-title bout, Sami Zayn managed to prove the doubters wrong by lasting 10 minutes against Braun Strowman, and I want to take a minute here to implore the WWE to reinstate two things that are missing that I think would help their televised product, I think would have helped this match out, and
can I guess?
Creates more options in general. Go ahead, can guess.
Rumor and innuendo.
Listen, it's not a rib. This isn't a rib. No, one of them is time limits for matches. I've been watching some Attitude Era stuff, and you see a Raw match that is sort of an undercard or a mid-card, and they, as soon as they hit the bell, they say this match is scheduled for one fall with a 10-minute time limit. So you go, okay. Then you don't have to go, well, they only got 5 minutes. You know, that's all this smark stuff that we do now because that's been taken away as a variable. It's just like, well, why didn't they only get 5 minutes? They got 10 minutes. That's a decent amount of time to do. Now you know there's a ticking clock. And for a match like this, it makes sense. Hmm. The other is the idea of a Broadway. They had to announce at the end of that match that he had won because he'd lasted 10 minutes. I don't think from a booking perspective, that's the right way to go.
Right.
The fact that it's a draw is a victory. He doesn't go down in the record books as the winner there. This is a moral victory for him. And the fact that they didn't sell it like that, I think devalues Braun Strowman, who had a really good match. He was a good big guy. They have really good chemistry together. So I have a lot of issues with the way it was booked. And that being said, it was maybe my favorite match of the night from a story perspective. And you got the bonus of Mick Foley getting whipped in the face with a towel by mistake. Go back and watch it. When he throws that towel to the audience, he whips Mick Foley. And Mick Foley starts checking his face and his eye.
And his teeth, like, probably.
Oh, his teeth got knocked out again.
They're still in?
They're getting looser and looser. Do you guys agree with me, though?
Having those things in place would have made it where they wouldn't have had to explain so much, and you're right. It would make that sort of situation make more sense in terms of making Sami Zayn look like a stronger opponent. My problem with the match is that I don't know how you have a match with a stipulation like that. Basically, the guy lasts 10 minutes, then he wins. And then somehow it still come off overbooked. That really weirded me out. Like, it's such a straightforward concept already. And you got Sami Zayn, who's one of the better performers in the world, and Braun Strowman's a guy who's picking up quick. I don't understand why they don't just wrestle the whole time. Like, as soon as Mick came out, like, the whole thing just torpedoed to me, because I don't understand how you take 2 minutes and have Mick standing there and have Braun standing there and have Sammy standing there, and like suddenly Braun's not beating the hell out of Sammy. Why is he not beating the hell out of Sammy right then? Like, and to me, I don't know, that's weird. To me, to take a 2 minute chunk out of the match right like that, it just really, it took me completely out of the thing, because it just, like, it was already a little bit on the nonsensical side, but then it just stopped making sense completely to me at that point.
Yeah.
Well, they brought it up during Talking Smack, or not Smack, Talking Smack, Raw Talk, right? Did you watch Raw Talk, Danielle?
No.
I didn't see it either. I watched
Charlotte, and Charlotte was great.
Charlotte was really good.
She was really good. I did not watch the rest of Raw Talk. There's only so many hours they're getting out of me. Like, I just can't.
Yeah. First of all, Booker T and that girl who looks like Six from Blossom. And dresses like her too, are kind of a weird pairing. But they brought up, Booker T brought up in speaking with Sami Zayn, like, there were 2 minutes of the ref checking on you, where the mat, you didn't really last for that long. Danielle, what do you think?
I like all the stuff that you guys said. I think I wanted more of a, like, don't have fucking Papa Foley shamble out. First of all, stop making that man walk. That's not nice. He didn't need to stop. Stop making him walk. That would have taken the whole 10-minute time limit if he would have tried to get up in that ring. But, like, I don't like the idea of him throwing in the towel at that point, because Sammy didn't look destroyed at that point, you know? Like, Sammy is great at selling, and he's dope, but I feel like I've seen him take bigger ass whoopings than that.
Right.
And, like, the same thing that people were talking about for Charlotte, or for Sasha, where it's like, you get your ass beat, and you get your ass beat, but you fight, and you fight, and you fight. I wanted to see him get fucking destroyed. Like, I wanted to see Sami Zayn get destroyed as they can do now on PG television, and still have him, like, fight. And not necessarily win, but still have that thing where he's like, I'm not leaving, you're not counting me out, I will take this ass whooping, but you're not beating me.
Right.
And I guess that's more of what I wanted.
I think the story that they were telling, at least on the microphone and promos leading up to this, that's what you would expect, because that's how you're looking for Sami to get over in this ridiculous situation. But, what the fuck? Why? Why Foley? Why a towel? Why a towel? Why involve linen in this? I don't understand.
Leave the linens out of it.
Why?
You keep them white. Keep the whites at home.
Right.
But if you're going to throw in the towel, it has to be because, like, Sammy is crawling now, and literally all of his energy is just lifting his fucking shoulders up.
And instead, we got something we should never get. You know what that is? We got Braun Strowman doing dialogue in the middle of a match.
Oh, so why are you twice?
Should not have had that happen.
Woof.
Now his blood's on your hands.
Yuck. I'm going to finish it.
Man.
Well, let's finish this so-so pay-per-view with the final major happening on the show. After a ho-hum match, which Rollins went over Chris Jericho, it was all in service of this moment when Kevin Owens retained his Universal title over Roman Reigns after Chris Jericho renewed his friendship with KO. Jericho hit Owens with a codebreaker, which created a disqualification. And Reigns then got an assist from Rollins as the two of them put Jericho and Owens through a pair of tables. Mike, we've all agreed that the Universal Championship reign of Kevin Owens has sort of waffled since its inception. Do you think last night's match has made you feel like there is a course correction happening?
No. I looked, and I enjoyed the moment of Chris Jericho coming out, hitting him with the codebreaker, and like Daniel said, that look of genuine shock and appreciation that Kevin Owens had on his face, absolutely adorable, and I'm here for it. But it immediately transported me back to Triple H handing him the title.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it seems to be further on that course of Kevin Owens can't get it done on his own. Kevin Owens is, he doesn't look like a main event guy. He doesn't look like the champion. He looks like, you know, a guy in a storyline that depends on people. And it looks like that's the course we've been on, and that's the course we're staying on. And, you know, personally, you know, that's just not doing much for me, because I think that they can put Kevin Owens in a much better position than he's in right now.
Right. Danielle, some folks are split on being bummed that they saw this as a decent at best match versus being happy. I mean, I think Jericho coming out was the biggest pop of the night in that match.
Yep.
And they're happy that Jericho and Owens are best friends again, as you've said.
Which
outweighs the other? Are you happier to see them reunited? Does that sort of forgive the match being okay? Or are you more going, well, that match didn't leave a great taste in my mouth, and this is just a poor consolation that they're back together again?
Yeah, it's kind of that last one. It's more of the like, well, this wasn't like the best thing, but like, here's a part that I did enjoy, you know, like I just didn't. And for the faces to like, when the face comes and they're like, you guys did some heelish shit, so we're going to take you down. It doesn't involve whooping your ass all over the fucking arena. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's not how that works. It doesn't work where it's like, well, you know, you hurt me, you stole this thing from me, and I am upset. Whoop their ass in the ring? Sure. But that thing where you're literally dragging someone's body from table to table, that's not your face move. And I don't know. I know that they're the Shield, but it's like they're doing this weird tweensy thing with them. And I don't like it. I don't like it.
Did people not like this match? I didn't see anybody's opinion about it. Did people generally just not like how the match went?
I didn't. For me, honestly, like I think you end on the Iron Man match.
Right.
For me, I think that's where you end it.
Yeah.
Honestly, the stakes were bigger. I know, like it's a tie, but the stakes were bigger. You cared. The story was better. That was where it should have ended for me. I've seen online that some people didn't care for that match. It wasn't bad.
I didn't think it was bad at all. I mean, actually, I can say I kind of enjoyed
it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a bad match. And I was happy Reigns didn't win.
Right.
And I got to say, too, I'm not altogether displeased with Roman and Rollins putting them through tables, because to me, at least, it pushes what appear to be the baby faces in this situation to having some sort of edge. And right. To me, having an edge isn't the same as them doing heel shit like beating up people that just got married.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like...
That is different.
Right. Yeah. It's not,
fuck your joy.
Right. It's not quite in
and
that
fuck
territory.
Your wife.
You know, it, to me, it's like having, like putting people through tables is just like, oh, okay, it's edgy baby face shit, which I can get down with. And
right.
And what I really appreciated was that the show ended with them just kind of standing dominant rather than them having their arms up looking to the crowd for validation.
Yeah.
Because that would have been, I think
sad.
That would have dragged everything down, because then you would have encouraged the chorus of boos and that would have fucked Rollins over. But I felt like the way that they executed that and just kind of had them looking dominant and cool and edgy, I
I like that course for them, but I like to see where that goes. That, to me, wasn't as offensive as a lot of shit that they could have done and have been doing.
Where they're just waiting, like, hey, guys, like me yet?
Right, exactly.
Like me now?
I just want to add a quick note onto the end of this, specifically for the ending of this match and everything you guys talked about, which I agree with. A note to the WWE production team. You guys have upgraded your technology over the years. The one thing you need to invest in is wireless headsets, because when all 900 of the commentators have to get away from the table real quick because it's about to be a spot, and then you have to watch the last 60 to 90 seconds of the show in complete silence, and including all the replays and stuff, while the crowd sits there scratching their crotches, because for them the show has ended, but we have to watch all this stuff without it being explained. It's not a good end to a pay-per-view. And you know that table spot's coming. That's not improvised. So why don't we figure out how to get them handheld mics or something so they can talk us through the rest of the pay-per-view.
Enzo and Cass got handheld mics. How you don't have handheld mics?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Kennedy had a mic fall from the ceiling. You know what I mean? Exactly. And we could do all sorts of shit.
There are mics hidden all over that arena. Just find one, for God's sakes. I don't know. That does it for Tights and Fights. We are a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. Our hosts are Daniel Radford and Mike Eagle.
Speaking of riveting endings.
Yeah. I really did. Oh, wait. Sorry. I'll finish it more upbeat. Mike Eagle is the voice. Oh, no. Our producer and secret soldier from Beyond the Glass is Julian Burrell. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music as well, so we're putting him over for that. We got to get in the spirit, guys. It's the holidays.
Woo!
Keep up with us all week long at facebook.com/group/tightsfights and at tightsfights on Twitter. And remember, review us on iTunes. Give us a gift that we'll appreciate forever with a really nice 5-star review. It's a big help to us, and it helps us grow the show when you tell other people what you like about our show. We'll be back in 2 weeks for even more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.